Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 901, Fascism, Past, Present, and Future. This is being recorded on April 20th of the year 2016. The title of the program pretty much describes what it is that we are going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about the past, present and future of fascism, Nazism or German National Socialism in particular. The thing to bear in mind and the central feature of what we're talking about is historical or political momentum or inertia. Even though we will be talking about the past of fascism and the present and the future, the momentum, the inertia, and the institutional continuity which has not only carried from the past to the present, to the future, but which has embodied and institutionalized fascism in certain respects in order to create and sustain and manifest that momentum or inertia is the central feature of what we are going to be talking about. And I want to once again emphasize that the written descriptions for these programs will prove central to an understanding of what it is that we are talking about here. We're going to begin with the past, and yet even in what we are about to discuss, which is the Associated Press and its stunning cooperation with the Third Reich, the degree of institutional momentum or historical inertia from the past to the present will be altogether visible in the AP's cover-up of the Lvov pogrom. There is a city in western Ukraine called sometimes Lvov, L-V-O-V, or L-V-I-V. It is one of the epicenters of Galicia or the western Ukraine and of the OUNB. We have spoken in the past about how in June of 1941, the Jewish ghetto in that city was liquidated by the Einsatzgruppe Nachtigall, or the Nachtigall Battalion. The leader of that battalion, Roman Shukevich, was named a hero of the Ukraine, and a street in the Lvov district was recently renamed in honor of the Nachtigall Battalion. And if I were in Ukraine and saying what I just said, I would be guilty of a criminal offense, because saying anything to, quote, besmirch, unquote, the OUNB or the UPA is now criminal in Ukraine, thereby making the actual recounting of World War II history in Ukraine basically criminal. The Guardian had, the UK Guardian had a very important article from March 30th of this year, March 30th of 2016, revealed how Associated Press cooperated with the Nazis by Philip Ultermann, O-L-T-E-R-M-A-N-N, as in Nancy. It reads in part as follows. Subheaded, by the way, German historian shows how news agency retained access in the 1930s by promising not to undermine strength of Hitler regime. The Associated Press news agency entered a formal cooperation with the Hitler regime in the 1930s, supplying American newspapers with material directly produced and selected by the Nazi propaganda ministry, archive material unearthed by a German historian has revealed. When the Nazi Party seized power in Germany in 1933, one of its first objectives was to bring into line not just the national press in Germany, but international media too. The Guardian was banned within a year, and by 1935, even bigger British and American agencies such as Keystone and Wide World Photos were forced to close their bureaus after coming under attack for employing Jewish journalists. AP, which has described itself as the Marine Corps of journalism, always the first in and the last out, unquote, was the only Western news agency able to stay open in Hitler's Germany, continuing to operate until the U.S. entered the war in 1941. It thus found itself in the presumably profitable situation of being the prime channel for news reports and pictures out of the totalitarian state. In an article published in an academic journal, Studies in Contemporary History, historian Harriet Scharnberg, S-C-H-A-R-N-B-E-R-G, as in George, shows that AP was only able to retain its access by entering into a mutually beneficial two-way cooperation with the Nazi regime. The New York-based agency ceded control of its output by signing up to the so-called editor's law, promising not to publish any material, quote, calculated to weaken the strength of the Reich abroad or at home, unquote. This law required AP to hire reporters who also worked for the Nazi Party's propaganda division. One of the four photographers employed by the Associated Press in the 1930s, Franz Roth, R-O-T-H, was a member of the SS's propaganda division, whose photographs were personally chosen by Hitler. AP has removed Roth's pictures from its website since Scharnberg published her findings. The thumbnails remain viewable due to software issues, unquote. AP also allowed the Nazi regime to use its photo archives for its virulently anti-Semitic propaganda literature. Publications illustrated with AP photographs include the best-selling SS brochure Der Untermensch, or The Subhuman, and the booklet The Jews in the USA, which aimed to demonstrate the decadence of Jewish Americans with a picture of New York Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia eating from a buffet with his hands. Skipping down. In June of 1941, Nazi troops invaded the town of Lvov in western Ukraine. Skipping down, instead of printing pictures of the days-long Lvov pogroms with its thousands of Jewish victims, the American press was only supplied with photographs showing the victims of the Soviet police and, quote, brute Red Army war criminals, unquote, Scharnberg told The Guardian. To that extent, it is fair to say that these pictures played their part in disguising the true character of the war led by the Germans, said the historian, which events were made visible and which remained invisible in AP's supply of pictures, followed German interests and the German narrative of the war. And this article in its entirety is available in the description, the written description, for the record, 901. Now, what we're going to do is to jump from the past to the present. Again, the slanted coverage that was given to Nazi Germany, not just by AP, but by other major American and Western news organizations, something, by the way, we talked about in AFA program number one that is available for download for free on the SpitfireList.com website. That has helped to create some momentum to the present. And now in Ukraine, it is literally, as I mentioned at the top of the program, a criminal offense to tell the truth about the UPA, about the OUNB, of the Ukrainian fascist organization allied with Nazi Germany, or any of their activities during World War II. And although it isn't a criminal offense in this country in the context of what the Pentagon is referring to as information warfare, basically a formal sort of militarization of the lexicon to take basically what has been known as propaganda and sort of sanitize it and project it into the journalistic vocabulary. Basically, what it amounts to is outright lying or propaganda. And the Nazi nature of many of the combatant forces in the contemporary Ukraine and the undeniable OUNB dominance of the Ukrainian government is essentially, although not illegal in this country, it will get you branded as a Russian apologist or a Kremlin dupe, or perhaps worse. It remains to be seen if ultimately, although not perhaps criminal prosecution, but perhaps selective elimination of journalists or writers in this country, or perhaps broadcasters who do not toe the line, so to speak, on this information warfare. It remains to be seen how far things will go in this country. One indication of how far they are going is contained in the article. By the way, we have talked about the Ukraine crisis and the return to power of the OUNB fascists in many, many programs. Those are linked in the description for this program.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
We are going to take a look at one of the things that is indicative of where we are going. This is an article from The Nation of January 13th of 2016, a story that was almost uncovered, so to speak, by the rest of our media. This article is by James Carden, C-A-R-D-E-N as in Nancy. Congress has removed a ban on funding neo-Nazis from its year-end spending bill. And it reads in part as follows. Under pressure from the Pentagon, Congress has stripped the spending bill of an amendment that prevented funds from falling into the hands of Ukrainian neo-fascist groups. In mid-December of 2015, Congress passed a 2,000-plus page omnibus spending bill for fiscal year 2016. Both parties were quick to declare victory after the passage of the $1.8 trillion package. White House spokesman Josh Earnest told reporters, quote, "We feel good about the outcome primarily because we got a compromise budget agreement that fought off a wide variety of ideological riders." The Office of House Speaker Paul J. Ryan touted the bill's $64 billion for overseas contingency operations, unquote, for, among other things, assisting, quote, European countries facing Russian aggression, unquote. It would be safe to assume that one of the European countries which would stand to benefit from the omnibus measure, designed in part to combat, quote, Russian aggression, unquote, would be Ukraine, which has already, according to the White House, received $2 billion in loan guarantees and nearly $760 million in, quote, security, programmatic, and technical assistance, unquote, since February of 2014. Yet some have expressed concern that some of this aid has made its way into the hands of neo-Nazi groups such as the Azov Battalion. Last summer, the Daily Beast published an interview by the journalists Will Cathcart and Joseph Epstein, in which a member of the Azov Battalion spoke about, quote, his battalion's experience with U.S. trainers and U.S. volunteers quite fondly, even mentioning U.S. volunteers, engineers, and medics that were still currently assisting them. And so in July of last year, Congressman John Conyers of Michigan and Ted Yoho of Florida drew up an amendment to the House Appropriations Bill that, quote, limits arms training and other assistance to the neo-Nazi Ukrainian militia, the Azov Battalion, unquote. It passed by a unanimous vote in the House. And yet by the time November came around and the conference debate over the year-end appropriations bill was underway, the Conyers-Yoho measure appeared to be in jeopardy. And indeed it was. An official familiar with the debate told The Nation that the, quote, House Defense Appropriations Committee came under pressure from the Pentagon to remove the Conyers-Yoho Amendment from the text of the bill. The Pentagon's objection to the Conyers-Yoho Amendment rests on the claim that it is redundant because similar legislation, known as the Leahy Law, already exists that would prevent the funding of Azov. This, as it turns out, is untrue. The Leahy Law covers only those groups for which the Secretary of State has credible information that such unit has committed a gross violation of human rights, unquote. Yet the State Department has never claimed to have such information about Azov, so funding the group cannot be blocked by the Leahy Law. The congressional source I spoke to pointed out that, quote, even if Azov is already covered by Leahy, then there is no need to strip it out of the final bill, unquote. Indeed, the Leahy Law cannot block funding to groups, no matter how noxious their ideology, in the absence of credible information, unquote, that they have committed human rights violations. The Conyers-Yoho Amendment was designed to remedy that shortcoming. All one need know about the Azov Battalion is that on their helmets they feature the swastika and the SS rune. That there is a picture of some of those helmets taken from a Norwegian TV documentary that was shown on German television. It is interesting that in this spending bill, cost of living increases for recipients of Social Security were denied by Congress. The inflation rate was deemed to be too low, although that does not, the inflation rate, the official inflation rate, does not include housing, costs of housing, which have been escalating considerably, including for seniors and Social Security recipients. However, there is money to arm and train members of a Ukrainian military unit that feature the swastika and the SS rune on their combat helmets. Your tax dollars at work. More about Ukraine, this from Sam Sokol, S-O-K-O-L, from the Jerusalem Post of December 27th of 2015. Ukrainian legislature, quote, toasts Adolf Hitler, unquote. No surprise here, by the way. The video of a Ukrainian opposition lawmaker saluting Adolf Hitler made its way online this weekend, only days after his country's president apologized for Ukrainian collaborators' role in the Holocaust during a state visit to Israel. In the video, Artyom Artyom Vitko, V-I-T-K-O, the former commander of the government-backed Luhansk 1 Battalion and now a member of the Radical Party of Oleg Lyashko, can be seen sitting in the back of a car wearing camouflage fatigues and singing along to a song by a Russian neo-Nazi band extolling the virtues of the Nazi dictator. Parenthetically, the Luhansk 1 Battalion is another of the so-called Punisher Battalions, one of the Nazi units receiving funding and training from the Pentagon. Continuing, while the song being sung by Artyom Vitko, Adolf Hitler together with us, Adolf Hitler in each of us, and an eagle with iron wings will help us at the right time, Vitko sang, saluting the camera with his water bottle as the car's sound system blared Heil Hitler. Vitko's pro-Nazi sentiments emerged immediately on the heels of party leader Oleg Lyashko's denunciation of President Petro Poroshenko for his recent comments apologizing for Ukrainian complicity in the Holocaust. Speaking before the Knesset last week, Poroshenko said that, quote, we must remember the negative events in history in which collaborators helped the Nazis with the final solution. When Ukraine was established, we asked for forgiveness, and I am doing it now in the Knesset before the children and grandchildren of the victims of the Holocaust. I am doing it before all citizens of Israel, he added. This kind of humiliation of Ukrainians has not been recorded in our history yet. During a visit to Israel, President Poroshenko apologized for the Ukrainian participation in the Holocaust, Lyashko posted on Facebook on Thursday. And skipping down, The sight of a member of the Ukrainian parliament singing a song praising Hitler underscores the extremely deep problem in today's Ukrainian democracy regarding the ongoing efforts in that country and elsewhere throughout post-communist Eastern Europe, especially in Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, and Hungary, to rewrite the narrative of World War II and the Holocaust, said Dr. Ephraim Zuroff of the Simon Wiesenthal Center. That should come as no surprise, and I think something worth noting in passing, something I will pick up at greater length and in greater detail when I update the fascist element within the Zionist movement, which is very real. This is not to say that Israel is fascist or the Zionist movement is fascist, but the right wing of it sure is, and I think there is a very real danger of that right wing becoming dominant, both in Israel, whichever it certainly is right now, and in the international Zionist movement as a whole. Certainly Netanyahu's Likud party has an overt fascist heritage, and Vladimir Yabotinsky, whose personal secretary Netanyahu's father was a doctrinaire fascist. And I'm sorry, this is a bit of an FU moment to those of my critics who have faulted me, and there have been quite a few, for characterizing Vladimir Yabotinsky or the Beitar as fascist. They were openly pro-Mussolini and were characterized as being fascist by, among others, Rabbi Wise, arguably the most important American Zionist. Albert Einstein called them fascists because they bloody well were. Yabotinsky was a doctrinaire racist, did not think that citizens of a Zionist state should, workers should be allowed to strike. And above all, he had an alliance with a guy named Simon Petliura, who is a hero to the Ukrainians. Petliura was a blood-soaked Eastern European pogromist in the worst traditions of murderous Eastern European anti-Semitism, and he was actually a political ally of Vladimir Yabotinsky, which really, I think, in addition to other things, just completely undermines the apologists for Yabotinsky and those who would say, oh no, he wasn't a fascist. I mean, aligning with the likes of Simon Petliura is beyond debate, frankly. Also, we should note the incredible hypocrisy of Netanyahu's government. Also, of course, of Poroshenko, but that should come as no surprise to anyone familiar with Ukraine. Petro Poroshenko, as we have seen in past programs, laid a wreath in tribute to the OUNB at the Babi Yar Ravina, spelled B-A-B-I, second word, capital Y-A-R. The Babi Yar massacre, there was actually more than one, are among the most famous incidents of the Holocaust in Eastern Europe. And two-thirds of the executioners at Babi Yar were from the OUNB, probably UPA. And someone mentioned to me that was like Ronald Reagan laying a wreath in tribute at the Bitburg Cemetery. No, it was much, much worse. Reagan visited and paid tribute to the dead at the military cemetery in Bitburg. There were SS buried there, but he did not go to Auschwitz and leave a wreath in tribute to the SS at Auschwitz. That basically is what Petro Poroshenko did when he laid a wreath in tribute to the OUNB at the Babi Yar regime, Babi Yar Ravine, I should say. Actually, Babi Yar regime is about right. That is obscene. But more obscene than that is the fact that he was not only allowed into Israel, but allowed to address the Knesset and weep crocodile. The Knesset, K-N-E-S-S-E-T, is the Israeli parliament. Now, Jimmy Carter, former U.S. president, of course, who has been very critical of Israel, and wrote a book in which he characterized Israel as an apartheid state, something that is, I think, inappropriate for Israel as it exists now. But if, in fact, as appears to be the case, Netanyahu does not go with a two-state solution and simply keeps the West Bank as, in effect, an occupied territory being economically exploited by Israel, then I think the apartheid metaphor would work. As it is now, it is inappropriate. However, because of the fact that he characterized Israel as a project. Jimmy Carter has been banned from traveling to Israel. Okay, fair enough. If you're going to ban Carter for calling Israel apartheid, okay, fair enough. I don't agree with that, but good enough. He's a former president of the U.S. But when the president of Ukraine, Petro Poroshenko, who lays a tribute to the OUNB at the Babi Yar regime, is not only allowed to travel to Israel, but allowed to address the Knesset, that is absolutely obscene. And there could be nothing that I can think of off the top of my head more characteristic of the philosophical bankruptcy and historical perversion that is manifest on the Israeli right wing, and which frankly threatens to overcome all of Israel if Israelis and Zionists are not careful. That is absolutely obscene and really gives the lie to the Netanyahu regime. Netanyahu is real big on weeping, oh my God, the Holocaust, oh, the Jews should come here, we're in so much danger. And then he allows Petro Poroshenko, who lives a wreath in tribute to the OUNB at Babi Yar, to address the Knesset and weep crocodile tears. That is obscene. Israelis should feel ashamed of themselves, and the unqualified apologists for Israel should feel ashamed of themselves as well. More about Ukraine. There has been a change of prime ministers. Someone who was at least a token Jew has been allowed to become prime minister, replacing Yatsenyuk, who was basically part of the Fatherland Party, which was formed in part by Nazi organizations in Ukraine, such as the Svoboda Party, S-V-O-B-O-D-A. However, one of the key members of the Svoboda Party, Andrei Parubiy, is now the Speaker of the Ukrainian Parliament. The Kiev Post of April 14th of 2016, Rada appoints Andrei Parubiy its Speaker. This is from Agence France Presse. The Ukrainian Verkhovna Rada, parenthetically its parliament, has relieved Andrei Parubiy of his duties as first deputy parliamentary chairman and appointed him its chairman. So now we have a member of the openly fascist Svoboda Party, a member and now the Speaker of the Ukrainian Parliament. Another article from the Jerusalem Post of December 21st of 2015 by Sam Sokol, again S-O-K-O-L, local Jews in shock after Ukrainian city of Konotop elects neo-Nazi mayor. They're shocked, huh? They're shocked, shocked. Well, they damn well shouldn't be. Skipping down in the story, this is about a fellow named Artem Semenkin. That's A-R-T-E-M, last name S-E-M-E-N-I-K-H-I-N. Semenkin. I'm probably mispronouncing that name. 2 months after local elections were held across Ukraine, residents of the small northern city of Konotop are expressing shock and dismay over the behavior of newly chosen Mayor Artem Semenkin of the neo-Nazi Svoboda Party. One of the key members of that party is now the Speaker of the Ukrainian Parliament, having been the interim defense minister in the government, the provisional government installed after the Maidan coup. Going back to this article, according to reports, Semenkin drives around in a car bearing the number 14/88, a numerological reference to the phrases, "We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children," unquote, and "Heil Hitler," unquote, replaced the picture of President Petro Poroshenko in his office with a portrait of Ukrainian national leader and Nazi collaborator Stefan Bandera, and refused to fly the city's official flag at the opening meeting of the city council because he objected to the Star of David emblazoned on it. The flag also features a Muslim crescent and a cross. Svoboda, known as the Social National Party of Ukraine until 2004, has been accused of being a neo-Nazi party by Ukrainian Jews, and while party leaders have a history of making anti-Semitic remarks, their rhetoric has toned down considerably over the past years as they attempted to go mainstream. Skipping down. The party managed to improve its standing during recent municipal elections, however, obtaining 10% of the vote in Kiev and garnering second place in the western city of Kiev. That is where a street was named in honor of the Naftogaz battalion that affected, the Einsatzgruppe of Naftogaz that affected the 1941 coup, pogrom rather, in Ukraine. Note here, for example, the 14 words, we must secure the existence of our people and a future for our white children. Now, those 14 words were minted by David Lane, who drove the getaway car in the murder of Alan Berg by the Nazi group The Order, patterned after the group of the same name in the Turner Diaries published by the National Alliance. And the facility for legal interference for the National Alliance to publish books that advocate racist violence and terrorism, like the Turner Diaries. That interference, as we have seen in previous programs, including and especially for the record 888, was run by none other than Glenn Greenwald. So members of that party were shocked, well, they shouldn't have been. Remember the 14 words, Svoboda's militia. Their combat unit is called Combat 14, again, named after the 14 words. We will hear more about the 14 words later in our program.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Turning now to Croatia, the now independent, or perhaps that belongs in quotes, state of Croatia, is manifesting its Ustaše past in a big, big way. And actually, it began doing that even before the breakup of Yugoslavia, as we have looked at in other programs, such as For the Record 154. And now the heirs to the Croatian fascists, the murderous Ustaše, whom we have talked about in past programs, most recently For the Record 865. The Ustaše are now coming out of the background and into the foreground, rather as is the case in Ukraine, although our media is doing its best to affect information warfare, as is the case in so many places like the Baltic states where they are honoring the Waffen-SS. The underground Reich is now coming back above ground. An article from the B as in boy 92 Tanjug, T-A-N-J-U-G, from B92, that is a Balkan blog, from December 28th of 2015. Ex-Prime Minister blasts new authorities as, quote, criminal and pro-Ustaše, unquote. This, again, is the former Prime Minister of Croatia blasting the new government as basically being neo-Ustaše. Zoran Milanovic, M-I-L-A-N-O-V-I-C, said on Monday he was concerned that people from a criminal, spying, and pro-Ustaše coalition, unquote, are coming to power in Croatia. The leader of the SDP, who until today served as Croatia's prime minister, spoke as his party joined the opposition and as the Croatian parliament elected its new president, while Prime Minister-elect Tihomir Orešković, O-R-E-S-K-O-V-I-C, said he was convinced he would put together a new government within 30 days. Again, that was the former Prime Minister of Croatia, characterizing the new government as pro-Ustaše, or pro-Ustaše. I'm not sure how the conjugation of that is. You will say U-S-T-A-S-H-A, U-S-T-A-C-H-I. I'm not familiar with Serbo-Croatian and how the adjectives and adverbs conjugate. From another blog, Balkan Transitional Justice, from February 12th of 2016. What were the Ustaše for Minister Hasan Begovic, H-A-S-A-N-B-E-G-O-V-I-C? This refers to the cultural minister in the new government in Croatia. In the text published for a pro-fascist bulletin in his student days in 1996, Croatia's new culture minister, Hasan Begovic, wrote about the wartime fascist Ustaše fighters as victims and martyrs. In the text published for a pro-fascist bulletin in his student days in 1996, Croatia's new cultural minister wrote about the wartime fascist Ustaše fighters as victims and martyrs. Zlatko Hasanbegović unambiguously glorified the Ustaše and advocated the establishment of the Greater Croatia in the monthly magazine The Independent State of Croatia, published in the 1990s. He was photographed in it with Mladen Schwartz, Vilimir Bujanic, B-U-J-A-N-E-C, and the son-in-law of former fascist dictator and Ustaše leader Ante Pavelić. In one photograph, he wears an Ustaše cap. The then-editor-in-chief of the monthly Sreko Pesečnik, P-S-E-N-I-C-N-I-K, was the son-in-law of Ante Pavelić and president of the Croatian Liberation Movement, HOP, a pro-Ustaše party founded by Pavelić. This represents an actual element of political continuity from the murderous Ustaše regime or Ustaše regime of Ante Pavelić, sheltered, by the way, by the Vatican, which had supported him, as we have looked at in most recently, for the record, 865, and the new government in Croatia. Again, the new culture minister was basically a political associate of Ante Pavelić's son-in-law. And, well, what can I say? The underground Reich is coming up above ground in Croatia, among other places. In the past, we have looked at the manifestation of pro-Ustaše or pro-Ustaše fascism in Croatia at football matches, what we call soccer matches. This is not uncommon in Europe. There is a lot of soccer fascism or football fascism. Another article from Balkan Transitional Justice, this from March 25th of 2016, an article by Sven, S-V-E-N, Milekic, M-I-L-E-K-I-C, Croatia's banal fascism on display at Israel match. The Ustaše chant heard at Wednesday's match, which the Prime Minister attended and the media ignored, is the result of long-term normalization of once outlawed fascist symbols. After Wednesday's football game between Croatia and Israel in the eastern city of Osijek, O-S-I-J-E-K, the fascist chant, Zadom Spremni, ready for the homeland, once more echoed in the stands. Supporters of the World War II Nazi puppet state, the Independent State of Croatia, NDH, whose Ustaše death squads took part in the Nazi Holocaust and murdered tens of thousands of Jews, Serbs, and Roma, made the chant infamous. By the way, that phrase, Zadom Spremni, was over the entrance to the Jasenovac's concentration camp. That was run by a couple of Franciscan priests who made a practice of strangling young Serbian children with their bare hands. We're going to, talking about the open use of the Zadom Spremni chant at Croatian football or soccer matches. We spoke about that in, for the record, 766. And a fellow named Joe Simunic, S-I-M-U-N-I-C, an Australian-born Croatian football or soccer player, basically led the crowd in that chant at a World Cup qualifying match with Iceland in 2014. And we're going to listen to that chant once again. This basically is the Croatian Heil Hitler. So here is Joe Simunic after Croatia's victory over Iceland in that World Cup qualifying match in 2014.
Zato!
have again Joe Simunic after Croatia's victory over Iceland in a qualifying match for the 2014 World Cup. That basically the Croatian Heil Hitler. And that was not 1944. That was 2014. Very quickly, by way of review, the reason why, or the vehicle through which these Croatian, Ukrainian, Baltic fascists, Romanian Iron Guard, and others have been projected back into Eastern Europe, the areas in which they flourished during World War II. Remember that Germany is a relatively small country. In order to hold sway over such a wide swath of land during World War II and to do the things they did, they relied on collaborationist groups like the Arrow Cross in Hungary, the Croatian Ustashi, the Romanian Iron Guard, the OUNB in Ukraine, the Linka Party in Slovakia, and various organizations in the Baltic states as well. Those groups jumped to the Galen Spy Org, which became part of the CIA, and then eventually became the West German Intelligence Service. And politically, the momentum, the historical inertia, was carried from the intelligence community into the Republican Party, and they were then projected back into Eastern Europe. Central vehicle for that, the Crusade for Freedom. Reviewing now, we've spoken about this before, but as we see the Ustashi coming above ground in Croatia, same thing happening in Ukraine and elsewhere in Eastern Europe, there is a reason for that. Reading from The Secret War Against the Jews by John Loftus and Mark Ahrens, hardcover St. Martin's Press, copyright 1994. Frustration over Truman's 1948 election victory over Dewey, which they blamed on the Jewish vote, impelled Alan Dulles and his protege Richard Nixon to work toward the realization of the fascist freedom fighter presence in the Republican Party's ethnic outreach organization. As a young congressman, Nixon had been Alan Dulles' confidant. They both blamed Governor Dewey's razor thin loss to Truman in the 1948 presidential election on the Jewish vote. When he became Eisenhower's vice president in 1952, Nixon was determined to build his own ethnic base. Vice President Nixon's secret political war of Nazis against Jews in American politics was never investigated at the time. The foreign language speaking Croatians and other fascist emigre groups had a ready-made network for contacting and mobilizing the Eastern European ethnic bloc. There was a very high correlation between the CIA domestic subsidies to fascist freedom fighters during the 1950s and the leadership of the Republican Party's ethnic campaign groups. This last sentence again. There is a very high correlation between CIA domestic subsidies to fascist freedom fighters during the 1950s and the leadership of the Republican Party's ethnic campaign groups. The motive for the under-the-table financing was clear. Nixon used Nazis to offset the Jewish vote for the Democrats. In 1952, Nixon had formed an ethnic division within the Republican National Committee. Displaced fascists, hoping to be returned to power by an Eisenhower-Nixon liberation policy, signed on with the committee. In 1953, when Republicans were in office, the immigration laws were changed to admit Nazis, even members of the SS. They flooded into the country, and Nixon himself oversaw the new immigration program, including the program for the SS. As vice president, he even received Eastern European fascists in the White House. The key people involved with the Crusade for Freedom, again from the secret war against the Jews. As a young movie actor in the early 1950s, Reagan was employed as Ronald Reagan was employed as the public spokesperson for an OPC front named the Crusade for Freedom. Reagan may not have known it, but 99% of the Crusade's funds came from clandestine accounts, which were then laundered through the Crusade to various organizations such as Radio Liberty, which employed Dulles' fascists. Bill Casey, who later became the CIA director under Ronald Reagan, also worked in Germany after World War II on Dulles' Nazi Freedom Fighters program. When he returned to New York, Casey headed up another OPC front, the International Rescue Committee, which sponsored the immigration of these fascists into the United States. Casey's committee replaced the International Red Cross as the sponsor for Dulles' recruits. Confidential interviews from former members of the OPC. And this group became a permanent branch of the Republican Party when George H.W. Bush was chairman of the Republican National Committee, again from the secret war against the Jews. It was Bush who fulfilled Nixon's promise to make the ethnic emigres a permanent part of Republican politics. In 1972, Nixon's State Department spokesman confirmed to his Australian counterpart that the ethnic groups were very useful to get out the vote in several key states. Bush's tenure as head of the Republican National Committee exactly coincided with Laszlo Pastor's 1972 drive to transform the Heritage Groups Council into the party's official ethnic arm. The groups Pastor chose as Bush's campaign allies were the emigre fascists whom Dulles had brought to the United States. And under the Free Congress Foundation's liberation agenda, those same people were projected back into Eastern Europe. Laszlo Pastor was the head of that program. He was the head of the Nazi branch within the Republican Party, again featuring Ronald. Alan Dulles' brainchild, overseen by Richard Nixon, fronted for by Ronald Reagan. The State Department machinations were handled by William Casey, and it was installed as a permanent branch of the Republican Party by George H.W. Bush. That is the Reagan administration. Reagan, Bush as vice president, William Casey as campaign manager, and then director of the CIA.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
Going back to Germany, we have spoken in a number of programs, For the Record 830, and again For the Record 882, among others, about Machiavelli 3.0 and 4.0, the terrorist incidents being perpetrated by ISIS, which itself is not only an outgrowth of the Muslim Brotherhood, but of the ongoing covert operations in Syria by elements of Western intel. They have been provoking the refugee crisis from the Syrian bloodbath, seasoned by the ISIS attacks, have basically been one of the major elements fueling a huge political reaction in Europe. One of the main German parties that has been generating political gravitas from that is the AfD, the Alternative for Germany. They are far more than just an anti-immigrant party. As an article by Tony Patterson in The Independent of March 18th of 2016 makes very clear. Revealed, the neo-Nazi manifesto targeting single mothers and mentally ill that the AfD doesn't want you to see. Alternative für Deutschland has been attracting voters as though it were a mainstream party. But a leak of its policies, including targeting the mentally ill and single mothers, has exposed the scale of its extremism. A leaked election manifesto has revealed that Germany's vote-winning new anti-immigrant party has plans for draconian laws which would discriminate against handicapped children, single mothers, and the mentally ill, and oblige history teachers to end a perceived overemphasis on the Nazi era in schools. The radical proposals are contained in an election manifesto produced by the right-wing populist Alternative für Deutschland, or AfD, party, which made sweeping gains in three state elections last weekend in a show of public opposition to Chancellor Angela Merkel's open-door refugee policy. The AfD's success meant that the party is now represented in 8 of Germany's 16 state parliaments. A poll published by YouGov showed that more than 70% of Germans now believe that the AfD is firmly on course to win seats in Germany's National Bundestag Parliament next year, when it will contest a general election for the future. The party's previously secret draft National Manifesto, which is due to be approved by a full AfD Party Congress at the end of April, has been published by the not-for-profit German research group Korrektiv.org. It shows that the AfD is far more than the single-issue anti-immigration party portrayed in recent campaigning. The party's manifesto makes it clear that the AfD wants a return to what it calls national values in Germany. It says it sees the traditional family, unquote, as the only model which can reverse the country's declining birth rate. To this end, the party pledges to take steps to ban abortion and make divorce more difficult. By contrast, German families which produce children should be rewarded with financial incentives, it says. Skipping down. The Social Democratic Party leader Sigmar Gabriel, G-A-B-R-I-E-L, argues that the AfD's ideas and language are, quote, a faithful reminder of the vocabulary used in the 1920s and 1930s, unquote, in a reference to the period during which the Nazi Party came to power in Germany. He added, quote, the AfD is trying to establish a nationalistic society based on the idea of excluding people, unquote. And again, the quasi-eugenics outlook of the German Nazi Party is reflected in the AfD's agenda. Sadly, the AfD appears to be appealing to young people to a large extent, not altogether unlike some of the success of Donald Trump and others. From the Australian of March 16th of 2016, an article by David Charter, C-H-A-R-T-E-R. Disillusioned German youth drive rise of anti-immigrant party, it reads in part as follows. The surge of Germany's new populist anti-immigrant party has been fueled by thousands of young voters, many of whom have never cast a ballot before, according to a research institute in Berlin. In a worrying trend for the established parties, the alternative for Germany, or AfD, was the top choice of voters aged between 18 and 44 in the eastern state of Saxony-Anhalt, where the party won 1 in 4 votes to transform the political landscape. AfD has harnessed discontent with Angela Merkel's generous refugee policy, but it was the left-of-center Social Democratic Party which lost most voters to the hard right, according to an analysis by Infratest BMAP on behalf of the broadcasters ARD. And I would point out that the brutal economic situation in Europe, Germany, and elsewhere brought on by austerity, and in Germany's case by the failure of many of the other European countries to which it exports, is also driving the surge to the right, not unlike the way it did in the 1930s around the world. Jumping now to the present and future of fascism, or actually we've been dealing with the present, a look into the future. From the Vice motherboard of March 27th of 2016, an article by Lorenzo Franceschi Bicherai, B-I-C-C-H-I-E-R-A-I, I'm probably mispronouncing this like many other names in this program. A hacker made thousands of internet-connected printers spit out racist flyers. Again, from the Vice motherboard of March 27th, 2016. The notorious hacker and troll Andrew Auernheimer, also known as Weave, last name, by the way, A-U-R-N-H-E-I-M-E-R, also known as Weave, just proved that the Internet of Things can be abused to spread hateful propaganda. On Thursday, Auernheimer used 2 lines of code to scan the entire Internet for insecure printers and made them automatically spill out a racist and anti-Semitic flyer. Skipping down. The incident shows once again that the apparently bright future of the so-called Internet of Things has a dark side, too. Hackers can creep out babies taking advantage of insecure baby monitors, expose kids' identities thanks to Internet-connected toys that collect and leave their data exposed online, or send a hateful white supremacist flyer all over the country with two lines of code. Yes, indeed. We have arrived at the future. More about Auenheimer. This from The Guardian of May 7th of 2015. Article by Alex Hearn, HRN. Twitter blocks promoted tweets by notorious white supremacist. And the subheader, the company acts to prevent further abuse by white nationalist and internet troll after he promoted two offensive tweets using Twitter's ad platform. Twitter has banned promoted tweets that were being used to push white supremacist messages on the website. The tweets were sent and promoted through the company's advertising tools by Andrew Weave Auenheimer, a former president of the trolling group known as the Gay Nigger Association of America, unquote. Among the tweets promoted by Auenheimer was one that read, quote, "Whites need to stand up for one another and defend ourselves from violence and discrimination. Our race is dying." A second promoted tweet read, "White pride, world pride. Do you know the 14 words, a reference to the white nationalist credo, we must secure the existence of our people and the future for white children." We look at that in connection with the mayor of Ukraine and also other Ukrainian politicians following the OUNB into power, basically the adherence of the OUNB credo coming to power in Ukraine. I would also note that Auenheimer is using his online activities to apparently augment a cache of bitcoins that he has as well. And guess who Auenheimer has been hanging out with? Reviewing now from the Daily Banter of October 9th of 2014, article by Bob Seska, CESCA. iPad hacker released from jail, parties with Glenn Greenwald, publishes neo-Nazi screeds. Talking about Auenheimer. Skipping down. Oh, in addition to his conversion to the neo-Nazi cause, as well as his seemingly prolific online hate speech, Weave, a.k.a. Auenheimer, attended a party in New York soon after getting out of jail. The party was held by none other than Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras to coincide with the ceremony in which the duo received the Polk Award for their reporting on Edward Snowden and the National Security Agency. Well, indeed, one might say that was an isolated incident, but unfortunately, as we looked at in For the Record 888, among others, it is literally business as usual for Citizen Greenwald, a man I have termed a shiller for killers. Looking now to the future of fascism and Nazism, concluding with something from the Ars Technica blog of March 24th of 2016 by Peter Bright, Microsoft terminates its Tay artificial intelligence chatbot after she turns into a Nazi. Microsoft has been forced to dunk Tay, its millennial mimicking chatbot, into a vat of molten steel. The company has terminated her after the bot started tweeting abusive people and went full neo-Nazi, declaring, "Hitler was right. I hate the Jews." Very interesting indeed. More about that in a Popular Mechanics article. "The most dangerous thing about artificial intelligence is that it has to learn from us," by Eric Limer from Popular Mechanics of March 24th of 2016. The entire article is in the description for the show. "When the next powerful artificial intelligence comes along, it will see its first look at the world by looking at our faces. And if we stare it in the eyes and shout, 'We're awful, LOL,' the LOL might be the part it doesn't understand." And again, the Tay AI chatbot went full Nazi in 24 hours. So that is the future of fascism. And as blues singer Taj Mahal said, "Man, if you ain't scared, you ain't right." Well, that's the way it is. This concludes For the Record program number 901, Fascism, Past, Present, present, and future. This is being recorded on April 20th of the year 2016. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.